British singer-songwriter Nina Clark and British guitarist Sam Dunn are a special pair. They can swing like mad or break your heart on a jazz standard, then be equally effective in other stylistic directions, from rock and pop to country and soul. I met Sam in 2010 when we played a concert together on a posh little ship in the Caribbean, a private party cruise for 90 used car dealers. I know, you can't make this stuff up. I met Nina more recently, became a fan, and brought her to Jazz Inspired to discuss her songwriting activities and her advocacy program, Musical Walkabout, which brings music to those with dementia, social isolation, and mental health challenges. Sam and Nina's CD, Easing Loving, celebrates the collaboration of Ella Fitzgerald and Joe Pass, a musical pairing that continues to inspire and inform Sam and Nina's own unique duo. I spoke with Sam and Nina from their home in England the week before they launched on a month-long honeymoon to the South Pacific and beyond. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. What gave Ella and Joe the idea to work as a duo? Was this just a Norman Granz thing? Was this who came up with this idea, or was this something they had wanted to do? Do you know?
I don't know. I mean, I'd love to. It's such an interesting question.
Yeah.
I've absolutely no idea. I mean, it's cheaper than touring with a big band, isn't it?
Well, you've gone to the thing that everybody, I always say this to people because they think that everything is a artistic decision, but you're the only person who just blurted that out because people always ask me about playing with a bass player. And I, early in my career, I loved stride, but I love bass. And I was going to do it till I found out how difficult it was and how expensive it was. And then my left hand got really good. So, you know.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
Yes, exactly. But I was curious about it because for me, and I want you both to talk about this. I mean, Ella always had so much joy, and people think of her with her acrobatic singing and those up-tempo things. And she did a lot of ballads. But those weren't the things that always, at least for me, made me think of Ella. But in this setting, she goes to a different, softer, more heartfelt place for me. So talk about that.
Yeah, I think I absolutely agree that intimacy, the affinity that she and Joe Pass clearly share musically, and the intimacy of just there being just the two sounds at play, it does encourage something I'd not heard from Ella's voice out, and you know, it's incredibly moving. And also that she is by that point kind of in her, you know, the later part of her career, and her voice is still, you know, incredibly acrobatic and you know, and athletic, but it has age on it, and it's a beautiful sort of vintage sound that she's able to, you know, bring out of those incredible pipes.
So Sam, speak to that, what Nina and I were just talking about with the difference in Ella's mood, but also Joe Pass, although I always think of him as going in that direction and settling in really easily, I mean, at least to my ears. But talk about that.
I think that it seems like they approach each song with a blank canvas. And I'd love to know. I mean, even at times, it seems like maybe they didn't even talk about key. They just sort of start. You know, Joe will do an intro and they're off. And I find that really, that's how we try to do this. We do sort of settle on keys, just because otherwise I'll hear about it later if I don't. But you know, they'll change key. They'll go off in a different direction. They'll push and pull with the time in a way that you can't do, obviously, just by the nature of the music when you're in a larger ensemble. And I find it really interesting comparing their duets with the duets of Bill Evans and Tony Bennett. And I love that interview, the chat you had with Tony Bennett, where it sounds like they had quite a different process where Bill, I'm going to call him Bill, I feel like I know him.
I know.
Take himself away for 20 minutes or even longer and just work on a concept for that tune. Mm. And I think I seem to remember you saying Tony Bennett was sort of saying to the sound engineer, you should record this, you know. It's amazing. And that's such a different way of doing it. And I love both. And I think probably there's a couple of tunes that we do where it is a little bit more, we sit and kind of have a more of a concept to it. But I think it's just that it is the intimacy, isn't it? It just sounds like they're in the room next to you. It's not, certainly on the first couple of recordings, there's sort of barely any reverb. It's just this really lovely, natural sound. I think they're magical recordings.
I thank you.
Ella Fitzgerald and Joe Pass on One Note Samba, recorded live on stage in Hanover, Germany in 1975. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. I'm talking with vocalist Nina Clark and guitarist Sam Dunn about their CD tribute to Joe and Ella, Easy Loving. I was thinking about, you've known each other so long. Do you remember, either of you, your first gig together and when that was and where it was?
Is that Kellen Bean?
First gig? Well,
that's a concert.
That's a very formal concert at school.
Well, that's a gig.
So the a duo I was in actually before this, of course, in my teens, our teens, I was part of a duo with a beautiful singer called Kelly Bourne, and we did these two charity concerts when we were in our, you know, 16 and 17 years, and Sam was part of the bigger band of those evenings, so. That would have been,
so that'd be the first time you were on stage together.
Yeah, I think so. I think I'd also sort of started gigging in a local pub, and I think maybe you came and sang. I have found a photo, didn't you, of my very first gig. So you must have been at that.
Oh, I sang at that gig.
There you go.
How
old were you?
Five, I think that is. So 15.
Yeah.
So not, shouldn't technically have been in a pub, but there we go.
Nor should I and our mutual friend, yes, Howard Alden. I've told you, both of us could have been thrown out. We were thrown out. Howard and I went to a music store and we were thrown out. We actually went to a music store, and it was Howard's idea. And we went in, and I was trying out the pianos and he was trying out the guitars. I thought we sounded great. Still, we were so young. He said, stop playing with the instruments, and threw us out. We've been thrown out of better places than this.
Yeah. Fantastic.
That's great.
I remember that gig, actually. I'd say we were 15. I was obsessed with the X-Files at the time, so had like a Dana Scully trench coat on and red tartan trousers. Mm. It was a special moment.
You were always stylish.
my presiding memory over that gig is, so I didn't know any jazz tunes. I just got, there was a trad band, like a sort of the English version of New Orleans jazz band that played there every Sunday. And I think they fell out due to musical differences, meaning, you know, someone had gone a little bit 1950s for them, I think.
Oh my God.
And so they got me in and a friend in, friend Stuart, who plays bass, and we were sort of thrown in at the deep end. And I'd already started listening to jazz and loved the idea of it, but didn't know what I was doing. So they, all I could play, in fact, I'm going to throw Stu in as well, was 12-bar blues in a couple of different keys and the first 8 bars of Autumn Leaves. And that was it. And we managed to fill this gig. And I'd sort of... It's funny, looking at the photo, it all came flooding back. So, yeah, I might stick it on my website, I think.
Well, you bust your way through your summertime, because that's what I sang.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
There you go. But see, this is great. I always love to go down this direction on this show to encourage people to just dive in. I mean, you know, Ella knew 2 tunes when she won the thing at the Apollo. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. She was going to be.
Which
she was
two tunes?
It was Judy by Hoagy Carmichael.
Amazing.
And that was the B side. And I can't remember what the other one was, but I know that she was there and she was going to dance. And then the girl who went on before was a better dancer. Mm. And Ella thought, well, I'm going to lose. I guess I should sing. And she sang and she won. And so I just think it's great. And I think I read something about Ellington not knowing very many tunes. And, you know, I only knew 5 tunes when I got my first job. And I think about it, I've known people, and so have you, that just keep thinking. Yes. I can't, you know, they keep getting all this stuff and then they never make that move. And just jump in.
Yeah, especially it's something I really try to encourage my, you know, I teach guitar and teach jazz. And it's something I just try to encourage them all the time, is just get out and play. Don't just sit at home and just think about all this stuff and practice and play along with backing tracks. Do a bit of that, of course, but get out and actually do it, because that's what it is. That's the whole point of any of all of this.
Well, and to have fun with it and not feel like I'm, I mean, Sam, I have quoted this a number of times because I turned to you when we did this memorable gig in Bern and that just went on forever, and it was all the loads of performing. And after one of our shows, I said, I have never, how did I put it? I made more mistakes in that show than I've made in my entire career. And you said, good, you're too pristine.
I must have been jet lagged, even though I think it's on the same time.
I loved it. I have told so many people, because we talk about it on this show, that it's one of the problems is that there used to be more gigs that were long-term. Mm. Like I would work 2 weeks in a club and things like that. And you could crash and burn. You could take loads of risks. People weren't filming it. Mm-hmm. And it was just a different attitude. It was a little chatty. So you could just take lots of risks. And we played so many tunes on that gig that I just thought, I'm going to play stuff I haven't played in a long time. No, I loved it. It was a real lesson for me. I thought, when did I stop being fearless? You know, I need to crash and burn a little bit more, because no one cares. The audience doesn't care. They're like, ha, 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 you know, and things like that. And if they do care, we don't want them. So there.
They're always on our side, I think.
Well, we were just watching that lovely video. There's a YouTube video of Ella and Joe doing their duets in Hamburg in, do you remember the year?
75.
There you go. So it's around the time these albums are made, or the first of them. And Ella just messes up the lyrics, doesn't she?
It's so slight, though. Yeah. She could have totally got away with it, but she does this beautiful, like, do you know, we're going to do another take. I was like, oh, amazing. Okay. And there's just like this lovely humanity her, you can see her shake her head as soon as she fluffs the line, and then you can see her being in her head about it for the next 2 lines afterwards, and like not give it. She's already decided she wants to do another take, and it's so interesting to watch like that, her artistry, but also her perfectionism, which I think I think of her voice as being immaculate, but I don't think of her as a like a perfectionist. I just think she's, she always sounds very exploratory and exciting. So I never think of her as being sort of particular in that way. But she was just like, nope, that's not good enough from the top.
No, exactly, and so cool. And I noticed that in one of the tracks that you sent me, that Joe just has this beautiful little smile on his face while she's singing, looking at her. Yeah, and you can tell he just looks so satisfied, and not in that kind of hyper, we're performing kind of way, just like, yeah, we've got a really good thing going. And it is such a lesson, because you also sent me something with Frank Sinatra, who, you know, who's cooler than Frank. But I have to say, in that, in looking at them, Ella looks even more relaxed than Frank. You know,
she's
just kind of snapping her finger, and because she's got that improvisational thing that she knows she can fall back on that no matter what, that she can make it happen.
I've wined and dined on Mulligan's stew, and never wished for turkey. As I hitched and hiked and drifted to from Maine to Albuquerque, alas, I missed the Bozarts ball, and what is twice as sad, I've never been to a party where they honored Noel Cat. Social circles move too fast for me. My whole Bohemia is the place to be.
Gets too hungry for dinner at 8. Loves the theater, but she never comes late.
I never bother with people I hate. That's why the lady is a tramp.
Doesn't dick dice games with barons and earls.
I won't go to Harlem in ermine and pearls.
She won't dish the dirt with the rest of those girls.
That's why the lady is a tramp. I love the free, fresh wind in my hair.
Life without care.
I'm broke.
That's okay.
Hey, California, it's cold and it's damp.
That's why the lady is a tramp.
Oh, yeah. I go to Coney.
The beach is divine.
I root for the Dodgers.
Help! The bleachers are fine.
Still following
shoes. And she reads every line.
That's why the lady is a tramp. I like the prize fight.
If it isn't a fake.
I like the rowing on Central Park Lane.
She goes to the opera, but she doesn't stay awake.
That's why the lady is a tramp.
Likes the green grass under her shoes.
What can I lose?
I always feel like whenever I watch Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald singing together, like videos of that, he looks intimidated.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is, you know, it's crazy because he taught the world to sing. But probably from that improvisational, you know, standpoint, she leads ahead of him. And you can see the reverence for him. Mm-hmm. And like, absolutely, that beautiful way that Joe Pass looks at Ella is, yeah, their affinity is just really special. I think you can see that mirroring back from her as well. And then you can hear it in their playing. You can hear there's such a lot of affection there.
Your track on Lush Life, I wanted to talk about because it was very different to me. And I've heard how many versions of Lush Life that we heard. But this is my own fantasy about it. So you can tell me what you were thinking. But you start a bit faster than most of the people I hear. They really go into, you know, dragging it out. They're tragic in the very beginning. And you didn't. You started a little bit faster to my ear, which my fantasy was sort of the person diving into life and still feeling pretty optimistic about things. And then you find out.
Interesting.
And then you find out the truth. And then you go into a slower tempo. It was very powerful to me.
I think that's really interesting. I think I was so obsessed with just trying to get that song right. I listened to it a thousand times. I listened to Ella singing it a thousand times, and I listened to a few other people, and then I just had to stop listening to other people and just, I'd be singing it in the shower, I'd be singing it in the car. And so once kind of the melody was embedded, we really did talk quite a lot about the push and pull of the tempo of it. And there is a theatricality to it. That lyric is so incredible. And that sort of quite, like you were saying, quite driven entrance. For me, I think, not that I was trying to be performative per se, but I think of it a bit like that chatty drunk person at the bar. That's I think the energy I was trying to come in with. And then like the more they talk, the more it kind of spirals down the drain.
It's an inherently funny song. I mean, I think it's hilarious. Absolutely. And that often gets sort of missed. People go, really slow.
It doesn't want to be melodramatic. Yeah. No.
I think the lyrics are hilarious.
And it doesn't need to be melodramatic. It's like when somebody's doing a ballad and they have lots of extraneous gestures. And I think you don't need to go, you know, hit your heart, your hand over your heart when you're singing about it. It should be, the message should be coming. Yeah. I loved it because I've never heard anybody approach it that way. So it was really wonderful.
I used to visit all the very gay places, those come what may places, where one relaxes on the axis of the wheel of life to get the feel of life from jazz and cocktails. The girls there all had sad and sullen gray faces with distangue traces that used to be there. You could see where they'd been washed away by too many through the day. 12 o'clock tail. Your siren song to tempt me to madness. I thought for a while that your pointed smile was tinged with the sadness of a great love for me. Oh yes, I was wrong. Again, I was wrong. Lonely again, and only last year everything seemed so sure. Now life is awful again. A truffle of hearts would only be a bore. A week in my brain. Romance is much with the rest of those whose lives are lonely too.
Vocalist Nina Clark and guitarist Sam Dunn on Lush Life from their CD, Easy Loving. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Our show is made possible in part with generous support from our listeners and from Paige at 63 Main in Sag Harbor, New York, and the American Hotel in Sag Harbor. Although we broadcast on NPR stations, we're an independent production not funded by NPR, but rather by individual donations. To chip in and support us, visit jazzinspired.com/donations. No gift is too small, and we very much appreciate you. For my full concert schedule, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Stride Queen, or visit judycarmichael.com and jazzinspired.com. My guests are British guitarist Sam Dunn and British singer-songwriter Nina Clark. We recorded this conversation right before they left for their honeymoon. Sam and Nina have known each other since primary school, which must be one of the longest courtships on record. Sam and Nina work in a variety of musical settings together and individually with their various bands, and Sam is often my guitarist when I tour internationally. Today we're celebrating Easy Loving, Sam and Nina's duo CD tribute to Ella Fitzgerald and Joe Pass. So, Sam, talk about how you think differently. I would think that playing with one person gives you so much freedom and you have such a broad vocabulary harmonically, but also emotionally, and that you get to really play with that. So I want you to talk about that with Nina, but also just both of you play in so many settings. I think it's interesting too. And you know, I'm a big fan of duos, obviously, but talk about that.
Just the balance between sort of doing the, the appropriate thing, but also bringing your own musical personality. That's the balancing act, I think, with anything. I mean, anything in general, but and in a duo, that's really, really exposed. I think on this recording that we did, I'm definitely trying to channel Joe Pass because, you know, I've stolen so much stuff from him and listened to so much stuff of his over the years that it does definitely come through. But also there's hopefully other things in there. I mean, there's going to be, and there's other things that he did that I'm not doing. But I think, yeah, I think that keep trying to keep your authentic musical personality. Like I play some sort of gypsy jazz, you know, Manouche jazz, with a few people. I have a band called the Hot Club of Jupiter, which is a lot of fun. But none of us are trying to play like Django and Stefan. We're just influenced by that music so that comes through. You're channeling it, but you're not trying to replicate it. And I think that's what hopefully we've achieved with this recording and all the other stuff. You know, I really love Grant Green and Pat Martino and all these guys as well. And that's definitely really in my playing, I think, in a big way. But perhaps when we're like Judy, when we're doing one of our duets, it would be inappropriate if I sort of do some kind of Pat Marcino, you know, kind of full on, you know. But and so it's funny, isn't it? You don't want to be too studied and too theoretical. It's more just like the more you play and the more you listen to stuff, you hear what's appropriate and what would work. And that's an ongoing thing for me. Because as we all have, I've certainly got my licks and tricks that I know are going to kind of sound kind of cool in a certain setting, and it's not always appropriate. ongoing, but being true to your musical voice, but also not just going, right, this is what I do. Bleh.
And then I think just like servicing the song, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think we're both very, like our musical heritage with each other is, we have a shorthand there. So there's not too much that I don't think we need to generally discuss the you know, the intricacies of things, other than like, oh, let's pull it back a bit there, or you know, maybe the tempos, you know, it's really I think we kind of are on the same wavelength most of the time, but then really servicing the tune and having that be front and center as much as our playing, I think I'm really mindful of that, particularly in a duo setting, because there's nowhere to hide musically, but then that's the thing that wants to shine through, I think.
The more I read the papers, the less I comprehend the world and all its capers and how it all will end. Nothing seems to be lasting, but that isn't our affair. We've got something permanent, I mean, in the way we care. It's very clear, our love is here to stay.
Nina Clark and Sam Dunn on Our Love Is Here to Stay from their CD, Easy Loving. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Easy Living. I love that song, and hardly anybody does it. I just love that song. So who wants to talk about it?
I actually have a hard time with this song for precisely the reason that I was just speaking about, in that, as you well know, I'm a big fan of Kurt Elling, and he recorded a version of that on one of his albums. Oh my goodness, I can't remember which one, maybe Flirting with Twilight. And I listened to it ever such a lot. So I'm always in my head trying to remove myself from his interpretation of it, because I don't want to just replicate that. But it's a beautiful song. And quite often, I think you'll agree, I'm quite often bumping it from our live versions, but I think I need to re-embrace it, because it is absolutely beautiful.
I second that motion.
We changed the feel a little bit as well, I think, in gigs. So we were doing it in 3 or 6 or something, just to try and get away from, you know, a quote unquote sort of definitive version that you might have in your head.
Mm.
I mean, it's an incredible melody, isn't it?
Oh,
just, I mean, lyrics as well, of course. Actually, so that's beautiful. The one I think on the album that you sound most Joni on, funnily enough.
There you go.
And I love it. I used to play it. You actually have inspired me. I played it a long time ago, and I haven't in 1,000 years. And I forgot about it, and then I was listening to it, and I thought, oh, I've always loved that. And another one, Comes Love. I love the arrangement on this. Talk about this. This was really fun. Sam?
Well.
Nina?
So we have a little, another project that we do is with a really great bass player over here called Ben Summers. Great sax player as well, but we work with him as a bass player. And it's like a vocal harmony, like trio thing where we both play guitar, we both sing, and Ben sings and plays bass, and we do our own arrangements of it's really fun. It's got me singing, which is quite new. Only taken you 30 years to, and we do Comes Love in that, don't we? Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Watch this space. I shall do Machu Picchu. We do Comes Love in that, don't we? And it's quite different. That trio was sort of influenced by like the Mills Brothers and people like that. And so I think we were slightly channeling that. And of course, just the original. I love it because it's just like a minus kind of chunk sort of jig. Yeah. But I know it's one of your things is sort of songs that are just endless lists.
Oh, God. Honestly, I'm not brilliant at retaining lyrics. Like, the music is fine, melody is usually fine, but lyrics are really hard. And the most difficult are just list songs. So, where, you know, it's the rainstorm, then it's just next thing on the list, and I can't remember what it is. Yeah. And it just absolutely does my head in. So, I don't have a definitive way of getting around those sorts of things, but I do. I love the arrangement on that one, and I really enjoy Comes Love. If anything that's just really sassy and swinging, that's such a great laugh to play. But that one, as soon as I can at least get into the rhythm of you know, even if it's a list, there's got to be a way I can make it into a story in my head and visualize the sort of cinematic elements. They're, you know, it's wonderful. It's wonderfully visual when you get into those lyrics. But yeah, the only thing I felt that one, I do miss the vocal harmony, actually, because we have such a really jolly time with it in the Clockwinders that. And it's beautiful. I think our version is really lovely on the album, but I want to hear that, you know, the spread when it comes to the title line.
Comes a rainstorm, put your rubbers on your feet. Comes a snowstorm, you can get a little heat. Comes love, nothing can be done. Comes a fire, then you know just what to do. Blow a tire, you can buy another shoe. Comes love, nothing can be done. Don't try hiding, cause it isn't any use. You start sliding when your heart turns on the juice. Comes a headache, you can lose it in a day. Comes a toothache, see the dentist right away. Comes love, nothing can be done.
There's a show here, and I stole this idea once, and I'm going to do it with you because you've known each other so long. Amy Poehler has a podcast called A Good Hang. Do you know this? Okay.
Indeed.
And she gets somebody that knows the person to have a question, to give her a question to ask them. And she has them at the beginning of the show. And I thought, you two have known each other so long. You've known each other since you were five, right?
That's
primary
right.
school?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking I would do that with you two because I thought it would be funny. So I want Sam, if you were interviewing Nina, if you were in my place or you were just going to give me a call and say, ask Nina this, I want a question. And Nina, I want something from you. I thought this would be fun. Because one of the things I find interesting in musical combinations, but also in people combinations, and I know you've had it happen, very often I'll be with somebody that I've known for years. And then somebody new comes into the conversation and asks them a question I never thought to ask. And I find out, say, you used to be with a circus? You know, you know, like, how did that happen? So I want you to think of something. I thought this would be interesting. Musical, you know, or something. Mm. This is interesting. Sam, you go first. See if you can think of something that you would tell me to
really
ask me. Now, that would be interesting.
Well, that's really hard. Or, my body language.
I just wonder, maybe, Judy, you could ask Sam if there is a genre of music he's ever been surprised to find in his playing.
Ooh, that's a great question. Okay, Sam, because you do have so many influences. So this is a very interesting question. So I've just asked you that question.
That's a really great question, Judy. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, well, I'm brilliant. What can I say?
Yes, yeah. So I started off playing blues, and that's, I'd like to think, kind of always there. But I never played any classical guitar. until kind of all the lockdowns and all that sort of stuff. And my one of my projects to sort of stay sane was to try and play a bit of classical guitar. And I really got into it. And so weirdly, I find little bits of that, like they really helped. I don't do any actually at the moment. I really should, because I found it really helped my playing. Just in terms of, I think before I sort of felt like the guitar was sort of, in terms of register and well, yeah, mostly register, but also kind of tonally was just like one thing, just blah, there you go. And it really allowed me to hear different kind of voices. Because, you know, range-wise, the guitar's not particularly big, you know, obviously compared to the piano. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think probably, you know, even on the piano, most of what one plays is in a relatively sort of similar range to the guitar. Obviously, occasionally you can go really low, really high. But it really allowed me to hear it in a different way so that I could play separate bass and chords in a way that actually felt more... I don't know if it comes through in the playing, but it certainly feels more separated. Whereas before, I would just think of like a chord shape, maybe play the lowest note and then like the highest two notes or something, you know.
Yeah.
And probably that's still happening. I'm not sure if I'm explaining it, but it feels like a different register completely now, like a almost like a different instrument within the same instrument.
That's fantastic.
And I didn't get really, you know, good at it. I was just sort of trying to play some Bach stuff and some of the kind of Spanish classical pieces. But it really helped and I found it really interesting. And probably that's the sort of thing I would definitely encourage my students to do, even though I don't actually do it myself at the moment.
I was just going to say about the, you mentioned the Bach as well. Mm. I think there's something, and obviously I do work with people living with dementia. And so I often have like an eye to what is perhaps the element of this that is good for well-being. And Sam just mentioning Bach, when I was trying to quit smoking, Sam had taught me some Bach and I was playing it on the piano and trying to learn how to do that because that's really not my wheelhouse at all. I have no classical training whatsoever, but I found that, you know, the melodies are so incredible and it was really, really engrossing, like in the same way that perhaps like a vocalese is, you know, fascinating. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's like a magic little puzzle. And any time I would get a craving for a cigarette, I would just sit down with the Bach for 5 minutes, and it just cured it. It was like a magic, like an absolutely magic pill for just absorbing my attention into the music. And I think that there's something, you know, absolutely fascinating about music's power to do that.
I also mentioned the thing you didn't mention there, because you're humble, is I would just tell you which note to start on. So you'd have learned something in G, like a Bach thing in G, and you know, you'd be having a craving. I'd say, right, play that again, but now start it on E flat, and he'd just transpose the whole thing.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
Exactly. Yeah, show absolutely off. Terrifying.
Well, but that's why it's absorbing.
It is terrifying. Oh, yes.
I challenge you.
Do it again on F sharp. And, you know, it was absolutely bonkers. So Nina writes songs, really great songs. The other sort of side of your musical personality, and maybe more so actually than the jazz stuff that we do, is your singer-songwriter stuff, which I think is amazing. And I would love to know where it comes from. Each song to me, you know, like all good art, sort of feels like its own little world. It has its own kind of sound language and everything sort of, you know, just feels like it kind of is in the right place. I'm not sure what the question is other than like, how do you do that? Because I can't.
I love your songwriting. And in fact, we're so used to people who, people are going to be mad at me for this show, but I'm doing it anyway, is that so often everybody thinks they're a songwriter. And what, 1% are good songwriters? And so even when I've talked about you, Nina, I'll say, and she's a songwriter and she's great. And people are so surprised because, you know, everybody's a songwriter. It really is. Sure. And I know because I get so much of this sent to me and there's very few people that wind up that I'll actually have them talk about their songwriting. So I want to know the answer to this. This is good. Good. Well done, Sam.
Thank you, both of you. That's very kind. I think, I feel confident in my songwriting in a way I don't feel confident in quite a lot of other areas of my musicality. Or not confident, but just like I feel very at home in my songwriting persona. And I would say, like the rest of the things that we were talking about, I think it comes down to my influences, those influences have been brought to me by my curiosity for sure, but also by other people. So by yourself, by my family, by our group of musical friends that we've grown up with. And so those sound worlds, I think, because I listen and love people like Sting and Billy Joel and Elton John and Joni Mitchell, and these are the very best songwriters in pop music. They are, you know, that's like reading a book on songwriting if you're really listening to that stuff and are interested in not just the greatest hits, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but you know, deep diving into their catalog and then going, why has Sting written a song like Fortress Around Your Heart that sounds like that? Who knows? But it's the sound world he's created by doing that, I'm then fascinated by. So actually, like the most recent thing I've been writing was influenced by that song because you were listening to it a lot and sort of introduced it. It was on one of Sting's sort of earlier albums that I had been less obsessed with, let's put it like that. And just being I was interested in the idea of trying to evoke a Sting-like sound world with my own personality, my own lyric, and my own intention in it.
Mm.
So I think that's how I would answer that question. Is like I'm very influenced by. Well, actually, my second album, The Changeling, the cover is this magpie behind us, and that's very deliberate. Like I am musically a magpie, and I will steal shiny things and then make treasure out of that. That is my process. I'll be inspired by something and then go, what can I make out of that? Delicious.
It's interesting to me that every one of the people that you mentioned, they're all huge jazz fans and they grew up listening to the standards.
100%.
Yeah.
And they're real
playing
lyricists
with jazz
and
musicians.
And they're real songwriters and they use...
Yeah.
I just had Christian McBride on, and he said he was asking Sting when he worked with him what his secret was to songwriting. Mm. And he said metaphor. Mm. And I think about it that I thought about that when I started writing, that I thought there aren't that many people that think that way anymore. But all those great songwriters we love were thinking of metaphor. There was so much more meaning to the lyrics.
Do you have a paint called Ron Seal? It might sound apropos of nothing. There's a paint, like a house painting paint we have here called Ron Seal. And basically its slogan is, does what it says on the tin. And like that kind of songwriting just leaves me cold. I can't bear to hear people speak about like WhatsApp in a lyric. That's gross. Talk about, you know, how communication is really strange and brittle these days, but you don't have to use the word WhatsApp. So like absolutely that, the anti-Ron Seal of you know, employing metaphors.
Yes, thank you for that.
It's just better.
That's fantastic.
I wrote my first song recently, didn't I? Sunrise Over Slough.
You did.
Which was plenty of metaphor.
I loved Sunrise Over Slough. I heard
beautiful.
That.
It's beautiful.
Not quite sure what to do. We may be playing it tomorrow night on a gig.
Oh my god!
But also we may not.
No, you must. I want
you
to
know.
Hear
I of course
it.
Because I'm a fan of Slow Horses, and they are in Slough House. You know, so that's their right. So that I immediately went Slough. So Nina, you were in the middle of fundraising, and I want to talk about this before I let you both go. And I'm so admiring of your activities in bringing music to isolated people. All of this, this was something I found out about you right away when we met, and I'm such a great admirer and supporter of these efforts. So talk about what you're doing now.
Thank you, Judy. So yes, my other hat as a musician is I run a community interest company called Musical Walkabout, and we are in our 11th year. And over that time, we have created many different groups and activities and courses and training. And basically, we work with people living with a dementia, and we explore how music can support our well-being. I say our, like all of us, people living with dementia, caregivers, health and social care staff, practitioners, like just everyone. And people very often speak about memory loss, which is really, you know, that's absolutely prevalent. But in terms of music, that can often lead people to think about reminiscing and going back to music from their past. And that is a big part of what we do. But I'm also really interested in teaching new music to people. So that's a big part of Songsters as well, is, you know, defying that you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Like, absolutely anyone can, and we do, and people respond amazingly. So yes, our Songsters groups have been going since 2019, and we want to reach more people with this campaign.
I want to thank you both for taking the time before your honeymoon trip, going all over the place.
And
I love the CD. It's easy loving. It's fantastic. And you know, I'm such a big fan of both of you. So thank you for doing it. I'm thrilled with it. And it's so good to see you both. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. Thank you so much, Judy. A constant inspiration to us.
Thank you. You've been listening to my conversation with Nina Clark and Sam Dunn. I hope you'll join me here next time when I talk with another celebrated creative person about how jazz has inspired their life and work. If you'd like to contribute to Nina's efforts to bring music to those with dementia, social isolation, and mental health challenges, visit musicalwalkabout.com/donate. I'm Judy Carmichael, the host and producer of Jazz Inspired. My production engineer is Curtis Heidoff. Listen to Jazz Inspired on all podcast platforms, your local NPR station, or at jazzinspired.com. Our opening music was Airmail Special, and the mid-break music is a smooth one from my CD, High on Fats and Other Stuff. The closing music is Old Fashioned Love from my CD Trio. I'm on piano with Mike Hashem on sax and Chris Flory on guitar. Although we broadcast on NPR stations, we are an independent production not funded by NPR. We're funded primarily by your donations. So please visit jazzinspired.com to chip in. No gift is too small. For more information on upcoming shows and my touring schedule, visit jazzinspired.com and judycarmichael.com.